Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Krumman are interviewing Mildred Menlo on December 1st, 1976. Mildred, we have been asked to interview you because of, I'm sure, the vast contribution you have made to the Jewish community in your work with Israel Bonds. But we would like to know something about you, and we want to know about your background as far back as you can remember, your grandparents, or if you know anything further back than that. Can you tell us something about your family, your grandparents, the background, the countries they came from, anything that would be historically important to us?
Both my maternal and paternal grandparents came from what was known at that time as Austria-Hungary. My paternal grandfather came to this country as a very young child. My maternal grandparents came to this country. My grandfather had been a widower with four children and married my grandmother, Kate, and he brought her here shortly after they were married. He had what was called a Wirtshaus. It was an inn in the Carpathian Mountains. And some of the delightful stories we used to hear when we were children was that Franz Joseph and his entourage, when they were hunting, used to stop at the inn for drinks. And when my grandparents came to this country, they brought the beer mugs with them that Franz Joseph and his group used to use. And my aunt has the mugs to this day. My paternal grandfather went to Scranton, Pennsylvania as a very young child.
Who went there? Did you say your paternal?
My paternal. My grandmother, I remember somewhat, I think I was about 8 or 9 when she died. My grandfather had what today is called a supermarket, and in those days was called a general store. And I think that that general store really was one of the most important things in my childhood. It's a very strange thing. As far back as I could remember, my grandmother had been semi-invalid, and they had a tremendous range of rooms over the store. There are about 16 rooms over there, and they lived over that store. In the center of the store, I remember, was a pot-bellied stove. And, I don't think I was more than 6 or 7 years old. They used to have the, if you remember, the soaps, Octagon and Felsnap, the soap came in wooden boxes. And I used to get a penny. Grandpa used to give me a hammer to hammer the little nails down after the lids were taken off, because the boxes turned up became the seats for everybody who sat around the stove.
And this was in Scranton.
And this was in Scranton. And this is where I got my earliest understanding of international politics, because there was a wide range. Many today ethnic groups, as we call them. There were Poles, there were Slavs, there were Croatians, there were Hungarians, there were Lithuanians. Every conceivable Russian, background that you could think of. And immigrants speaking broken English or could not speak English at all. And when I was 8 or 9, I was fluent in Polish and Slavish. I could never talk Yiddish, because Yiddish was never spoken. You see, my grandparents had come here at such an early age. Parents born here. Yiddish was never spoken. I never learned Yiddish until I went to New York to live, went to school, and worked. But Polish and Slavish, I knew. My grandfather was, my paternal grandfather was a most unusual man. And I think this was the background of community identification for all of us.
Was this your paternal or maternal grandfather in Scranton?
This is my paternal grandfather.
In Scranton?
Yes, in Scranton. As a matter of fact, my son is named for him. He was always called Pan Michal by all of the people there, which was, you know, a title of respect that they had given
What
him.
Was his name?
His name was Michael Max.
And the last name?
Judd. J-U-D-D. He was a very warm and very understanding man. Now, I lived there, this was the anthracite coal region, and I lived there during the days of the very serious strikes and the formation of union. This was when John L. Lewis first came into the anthracite coal region. From the time we were very little children, we had an identification with what was going on in the world. My father was active in politics, too.
Now, what year would you put this at, when you lived there?
Well, I lived in my family lived in Scranton until the early 30s. We lived there. My mother and father were married in 1908 or 9. Matter of fact, my mother has a big birthday this month, and the grandchildren are doing the party. Now, they don't know whether it's her 89th or her 90th, but they have come to the point where they say, who cares? You know, at this point, let's have a party. My grandfather had an identification in the community from the time he was a young man. I remember the things that impressed me about that period were paydays. You see, everybody had a book. And in those days, the foreign groups, they would take over these big houses, and they had boarders. This was the only way they could manage. And they used to buy foods in sacks. And I never forget, there were two teams of horses in the early days in the wagons that went out into the outlying areas, like we would have Duquesne and Carnegie, you know, and areas like that now. They were just dirt roads going out to that area. And people used to buy sacks of flour, sugar, beans, you know, things of that sort, a side of bacon, because some of them had 15, 18, 20 in a household. Not their own, but boarders. And payday, they would come in with the book. And the book was balanced. My grandfather could add 4 columns of figures at sight. There was a great big high desk, and he sat on the stool behind that. And they used to bring...
Was he educated in any way in Europe or something?
No, he came here as a child. His education was here.
Here, oh,
yes.
All right.
His education was here. I don't think he had more than a few years maybe of high school, that's all. But he had a fantastic math mind, and he could add 4 columns at sight. Now, when the book was balanced, payday, you knew when payday was, and I was always dressed. My mother, when I was a child, made my clothes, because my mother was a designer. And I will never forget having these dresses with the yards of lace and, you know, and the big bows put on. And I went to the store, and these people always brought their children in on payday. And once... Once the book was balanced, the children came down the end of the counter to me, and there were cartons of Cracker Jack and little box of oranges, because in those days, oranges, they didn't buy them,
And each child got a box of Cracker Jacks and an orange and a bag, and they could take their selection of cakes from those old National Biscuit racks, you know, of store cakes. And I was always so excited when I could hand these things out.
And that was your job.
That was my job. You know, this was from the earliest, because he was sort of a personal police gave. When they came in, if they needed money, things were rough. They would get money. They would put it on the books. You know, and this is it. If they had to buy a house, they all knew they could come to Pan Michael, and they would be helped. One of the stories about it that I remember was that there was a Pole who came to the country with some money and opened a store across from my grandfather's. But they still came to my grandfather, and he resented it. He was the world's worst anti-Semite. And he went to the priest in St. Mary's Church, and he wanted him to make an announcement from the pulpit that they should patronize their home. And the priest refused to do it because they knew how many baskets of food went out of my grandfather's store to the needy, which nobody knew about because the priest came to him. St. Mary's was a small, ramshackle church. And they decided, oh, I think I must have been about 8 or 9 years old at the time, and they decided they had enough people together and they could build a church. And they went to this Pole who had the store across from Grandpa and asked him for money. He said to them, you don't shop with me. You shop with the youth across the street. Go to him for money. So a committee came to my grandfather, and I was in the store that day, and I will never forget. So they were dressed, not in their miner's clothes, but they were dressed in their church-going clothes, as they call them. And they discussed with my grandfather what he would give them. And he sat on that stool, and I can still see his face to this day, and he said to them, when we Jews built our synagogue, they had a beautiful synagogue there, we did it ourselves. Now I realize that many of you are laborers and don't have too much to give. I will not give you anything for your church to help you build that church. If you want it, there are enough of you who, if you can't give money, can give labor. But I will tell you what I will do for you. I have always heard Father John talking about the bells of his church at home in his village. You build your church, and I will give you the steeple and the bells. And they built that church. And in my mind, I shall never forget the dedication, the first time those bells pealed. So, you know, these are some of the, this is the way.
Memories,
yes,
right.
This is the way he would help people. He did not feel that it was enough just to give somebody something. His feeling was that you had to, in giving, you had to make it possible for people to do things for themselves. And this was his manner of doing things.
What kind of a wife did he have?
She was the dearest, his Frimmet, as he called her.
And her name was?
Her name was Frimmet.
How do you spell that?
F-R-I-M-I-T. My youngest brother, Frank, was named her. She had been quite ill. Later, I understood, you know, as a child, I didn't know what it was all about. Her grandma used to sit with her feet up on a little stool. I understand that actually what she had was a goiter. And she was, goiter surgery in those days was done. It was a risky thing. And she did not want to submit to surgery. I was about 7 when she realized that she was getting progressively worse.
And when she had come to the United States as a child, two of her sisters went to what was then Palestine. And she said she wanted to see them before she died. And she went. And of course, I don't have to tell you what a trip it was, but it, I remember vaguely that. But you know the thing that stood out in
but
my mind?
But what year would that have been? That,
that had to be... Let me see. I think it was about 17. It was the year before World War I broke out. And she, the thing that sticks, you know, the little things that remain with you was my grandfather was devout, and so was my grandmother. Now, the problem was that that boat sailed on Saturday. And how could she go? You know, I'd go down the way, go by boat. So they had to ask a shawl. And they were told that if she could board the boat on Friday and light her candles Friday night before the boat sailed, that that was her home. And she could be on the boat. But, you know, these are the little things, the discussions, because... There were no secrets. You know, these things were always part of us. Our dinner table at home was like a forum. It always was. And, you know, this was a part of it.
All right.
Us.
Now, your paternal grandparents had how many children?
Let me think. There was my father, Uncle Henry, grandmother, Tilly, and Rose, and my six children. They had seven and lost one when I was very young.
Your father, Harry, Rose, Tilly, and
there was my father, his brother Harry, who just died this past year. My aunt, Tilly Miller, who at 90 is still alive. My aunt Hannah, who died. My aunt Anne, who died. And my aunt Rose, who was the youngest, who is still alive. My aunt Tilly, last week, buried her third son. And I have a note from her. She plays bridge once a week.
Where do they live? Where she lives?
They live in Scranton. The family, my paternal end of the family, the brothers and sisters, never moved out of Scranton. Their children were all up.
There were how many children originally? Seven children?
Seven children.
But only six?
One died at the age of 12 or 13. He was drowned. In quicksand. He was just walking over a little brook with some of the boys, and a spot of quicksand caught him, and he went down.
Now, your parents had how many children?
There are five of us.
And their names are?
Philip.
Philip Judd.
Philip Judd.
And where does he live?
He lives in New York. Robert Judd, he lives in New York. Thelma Judd LaPem, L-A-P-E-M-M.
L-E-L-A-P-E-M-M.
And Frank Judd.
Where's
Thelma?
Thelma
lives in Salem, Massachusetts. And Frank lives in Framingham, Massachusetts. In my mother's family, there were, my grandfather was a widower with four children, and then he and my grandmother had nine. Now, I was in my teens.
You mean nine
your
more?
Mother,
nine more.
Your mother is from the first marriage?
My mother is from the second marriage. I was in my teens before I knew that they were half-sisters and brothers. That is how close, you know, the family relationship was. My mother lost a sister who was 23 years old. She was married to a cousin of my father's, and both couples lived in Scranton. Aunt Rose was 23 when she died, left three children, 3, 2, and 11 months old, and my grandparents took those three children and raised them with their family because their father never remarried.
Yeah, he just couldn't handle it.
Your maternal grandparents lived in Scranton too then? Where'd they live?
My maternal grandparents lived for a while in a small community outside of Scranton called Olyphant.
M-A-L-O-L-Y-P-H-A-N-T.
And then Grandma wasn't well. And they decided that maybe the sea air would be better for her. And they moved to New York. They felt the opportunities would be better for a family of that many children. They're very creative people.
Now, in your home, your mother and father, how did they meet, or do you have any idea?
Yes.
Know about that?
My mother had come to Scranton to visit some cousins. My mother was a very beautiful girl. Really, she was just a magnificent girl. My father, at that time my grandfather was well established, and my father was a very eligible young man. You know, I don't have to tell you
each other,
they found each other.
Where's your father now?
My father's dead.
Yes, but did he, was he educated in Scranton?
In Scranton, yes. My father graduated the high school in Scranton and had, I think it was 2 or 3 years of business college there.
And what did he do for a living?
My grandfather did not want my father in the big store that they had. They had about 6 in help there, 6 men. But he felt the hours were very bad. He was a young man, married, you know, family coming on. My grandfather backed another man in a wholesale grocery business, apart from his own business, and my father was in the wholesale grocery business.
All right, now what about the other brothers, his brothers?
His brother was in the store with Grandpa for many years. He wasn't married, and Grandpa felt okay. You know, somebody had to eventually take over. But when my grandfather realized the time had come when he did not want to carry on, he had taken 68th cousin of some sort into the business because he had 4 or 5 children, couldn't make a living, and he had decided he was going to turn that business over to him. He spoke to the man he had backed in this business and said, "Look, Cyril, I think it's time that you and I pulled out completely and let's turn it over." It was a very, very big business. Turn it over. Now, Cyril had 2 sons, so they pulled out completely, and the whole business went to the 4 sons. And that's where my father and his brother and Mr. Greenberg's 2 sons went into the business.
Mm-hmm. Now, your father's name was?
Isaac.
Isaac. We didn't get that. I didn't think.
Yeah, Isaac.
Isaac.
My mother's name was Bertha. Bertha Joseph's Joe.
Let me just go over this. Your father and his distant cousin backed out, and the distant cousin's 4 sons took the business. Is that what you said?
This distant cousin stayed in that retail business, and my uncle and my father and Mr. Greenberg's 2 sons went into this major project, the wholesale grocery business.
All right, now your mother met your father. Was she educated in this little town?
No, they lived in New York at the time they were growing up. When they were growing up. My mother's family were all creative people. My grandfather had a sub-patent. You know the interlocking thing on trains that hook the trains together? He had an interlocking patent on that, which he sold for $5,000. Do I have to tell you more what it would have meant? They had a tragic occurrence. When they came, my grandfather decided he wanted to be a merchant,
and opened a store in Oliphant. They were doing very well. It was destroyed by fire. No insurance. Now, when they went to New York to live...
After that tragedy,
they went to New York to live. My grandfather had always been an artisan of sorts. And he went to work with artisans who worked on, for example, like the doors of St. Patrick's Cathedral. You know, things of that sort.
In metal?
In New York.
In what kind of...
In metal.
Wood.
In metal. Metal. Metals. And his creative talent was a great deal in designing, and it came right down through the family. One of my mother's brothers was a designer and manufacturer of women's clothes. My Uncle Samuel was a very prominent commercial artist in New York.
And the family name was Joseph?
Josephs. My Aunt Sally, you probably know by name, in millinery design, Sally Victor.
Oh.
My mother's sister, you see.
That Victor was her husband's name?
Her husband's name. Sergio Victor was her husband. They have all been extremely creative. My mother designed blouses before she was married. And until I went to high school, I never had a dress that she hadn't made.
So your mother had...
five children.
Yeah. Your mother had brothers and sisters is what I wanted to know. She had two brothers and one sister?
No. My mother had... In mothers there was...
Sam Joseph.
Uncle Sam. Morris Josephs. Sally, Carolyn, Adele, Mildred, Sally.
You said
you
Sally.
Sally.
No, mother. Who did I miss? Oh, Charles. That nine?
Seven.
Eight.
Nine?
Morris, Sally, Carolyn, Adele, Mildred, Charles, Bertha.
All right. Well, enough
of them, I guess. In their home, you mentioned that your paternal grandparents were very devout.
Yeah.
What about your maternal grandparents?
They were too.
What about the cultural atmosphere in your, let's talk about your, were your parents devout?
They were, not
to the same extent.
Yeah, I mean, for example, they belonged to the same Orthodox shul, let me say, but they were not Sabbath observers to the extent that my grandparents were. And I mean, you could see the change, the adaptation to the needs of the modern world in our home.
And
my father and mother had a strong identification in the community leadership. My father was the founding president of the YMWHA in Scranton.
And tell us about your home then, culturally, how they were disciplinarians or anything.
They were very firm disciplinarians, my mother more so than my father. But you see, our whole cultural life was enmeshed with what went on at the Y. All of the cultural events took place at the Y. The lecture series, the music series. Our Sunday school was at the Y. When I was a child, there was no other Sunday school. All of the children went to the Y Sunday School. The directors of the Y developed all of the cultural programs there. You had your debating programs, you had your debating society, you had your drama league. All of this took place at the Y. So that from the time I was, well, I think I can remember my first lecture was when I was about 9 years old. My father took me to hear Stephen Wise. All of the concerts, top opera concerts, you know, in those days, they all came through in concert. We never missed.